Our next guest today is Sonali Gulati, the director of an award-winning documentary which examines the culture of call centers in India. Filmmaker Sonali Gulati used to spot telemarketers by the way they mispronounced her Indian name.
Hello?
Hello, ma'am. May I please speak with Sonali Gulati?
Gulati?
Yes.
I'm sorry, there's nobody by that name here. Hello?
Good morning. Can I please speak with Somalia Gelatin?
Gelatin? Sorry, but there's no one by that name here.
But when they started to get the name right, she knew something was up.
Hello?
Hello, may I speak with Miss Sonali Gulati?
Yeah, this is she.
Good afternoon, ma'am. This is Nancy Smith calling you on behalf of...
Who?
Ma'am, this is Nancy Smith calling you on behalf of Visa Platinum Card. For every dollar that you will charge to your card, you will earn frequent flyer miles.
The telemarketer, Nancy Smith, caught Gulati off guard.
She pronounced my name perfectly. Oddly enough, she was calling me from my home in New Delhi to my home in Philadelphia.
So, Gulati hopped on a plane and flew to her native India to make a documentary film about telemarketers like the Indian woman who had assumed the name Nancy Smith.
She was Nalini by day and Nancy by night.
Our guest today is Sonali Gulati, the director of an award-winning documentary which examines the culture of call centers in India. She's an assistant professor of filmmaking at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond. While shooting her film, she discovered how coveted these call center jobs in India are, how young Indian telemarketers strive to acquire American names and accents and learn about American movies, music, and television, and live by the American clock, working at night and sleeping during the day. Her film, Nalini by Day, Nancy by Night, is a journey into that world.
Maybe I'll just start from where I started the story from. I've been living in the US since 1993, and of course I've been getting telemarketing calls, and one of the ways that I gauge that it's a telemarketer is that they normally butcher my name. So they'll call me Somalia Gelatin or I don't know, all kinds of names. And so I usually like just say, well, this person's not here, and I slam the phone down. One day this guy called me and he pronounced my name perfectly. I was totally struck. I was like, oh my God, I've dodged these calls for years and here I am like talking to a telemarketer. And he had a distinct Indian accent, even though he spoke in English, and he was trying to put on this American accent, and he gave his name as John. And I became really curious, and soon he revealed to me that he was calling from New Delhi, which is where I grew up. And here I was talking to a telemarketer, and for a change, I wanted to talk to him. I wanted to know more about what was he doing and, you know, why is this happening?
So you actually got on a plane and decided to shoot footage of the call center in New Delhi.
I did. I was really, I mean, it was hard to get into call centers. You know, people, they were a little bit suspicious of what my intentions were. Like, you know, people living in the U.S. Have... for the most part said, well, you know, jobs are being taken away from the U.S. And that's a real threat.
This is With Good Reason. More about the culture of Indian call centers after this break. Sarah McConnell here with Sonali Gulati, director of a documentary about Indian call centers. So you went to New Delhi, India, ready to film, and pretty certain you were going to see some bad conditions and a kind of modern sweatshop. What did you find?
I was really amazed. I found a call center which was excellent working conditions, like, you know, air conditioning. It was very neat and clean. People were being paid well. They had recreation rooms where people played ping pong. They had food that was being served, like, you know, endless amounts of food. I was so hungry while shooting. And they got picked up from home and dropped off at home. And it was like this, you know, amazing service. I mean, I was just thinking, I would love to have a job that would pick me up from home and drop me back home.
Why are the companies sending taxis to pick up these employees and delivering them home again?
Well, largely because they want to hire women. And parents are afraid to have their children, especially girls, go out working at night. A lot of them living with their parents, earning a lot more money than their parents are earning. They just have this sort of independence, you know, 18, 19-year-olds who go to work while their parents are asleep and they're home while their parents are at work.
Why are they going at this odd hour? Why are they working by night, sleeping by day?
Because of the time difference in the U.S. and India, it's approximately a 12-hour time difference. So they're working according to Eastern Standard Time. And so they have a lot of independence. I mean, you know, in terms of class, like they're earning a lot more money than their parents are. And two, they just have freedom to do whatever they want because their parents aren't really around to watch them.
How much are they earning?
Most call center employees are earning around $200 to $300 a month. And that may not seem like a lot, but given the standard of living in India, it's probably the amount of salary that a fresh MBA graduate would earn in India. Most call center employees would earn around $7 a day. My guess is that their parents would probably earn anything to $3 to $4 a day. And this is, of course, sort of talking about middle-class families living in urban India. $7 a day is a really decent salary. I mean, it's, like I said, something that they can afford to buy a house in a couple of years.
How do you think the call centers are changing the lives of these young men and women who are hired to work there?
Well, I think it's changing the lives in many respects. One, there's a huge migration from rural India to urban India because basically, what's required in a call center in terms of a job is the ability to speak in English and the ability to understand somebody who's also speaking in English in a different accent. And India has, I think, 2 to 3 million English-speaking graduates each year. And then in terms of other effects, one, it's the middle class in India, which was, you know, really invisible. It really didn't exist in reality, even though there was this concept of, yeah, there's upper class, lower class, middle class. That middle class is really now existing. It's a reality. So it's definitely creating jobs, not just for people working directly, you know, as a telemarketer or on the phone, but for people who are working at gas stations that are going to fill up the cars that are going to pick up these people, for drivers who are going to be driving these cars, for people manufacturing computers, repairing phones. So for every one job that's created in a call center, there are four additional jobs that are created as a result of that. It's creating jobs for women in particular, because women, you know, traditionally have been considered good at sales. And it's very stereotypical, you know, tech support jobs, they want men. Sales and marketing, they want women. Culturally, too, I mean, the streets of Delhi, it's suddenly really lively at night. I mean, you know, rush hour traffic is not always at 9 a.m. or 5 p.m. Now it's rush hour traffic at 2 in the morning, at 5 in the morning, at 9 o'clock at night.
I noticed in your documentary how the call center operators, the people on the telephones, are asked to accept American names. So you had Harry instead of
Harpreet.
Right. Why is that?
Yeah, they do. I was really fascinated by that whole issue as well. You know, why do you change your name? Why can't you just be Harpreet? Why do you have to be Harry? And he said, you know, my employers are protecting me from racism. If I told somebody I'm Harpreet, if I told an American that, they may say, oh, you're calling from India, and they may be prejudiced. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, isn't there something inherently racist in just making that request of you? And then I would go, when I went to the call centers, actually, I asked people who are managing call centers, and I said, why is, why is there this need to change people's names? And the response I got was, it's just to ease communication. You know, it's just to get that out of the way. You're not sitting and pronouncing the name three times. And very often they've, you know, anglicized names. It's like Harry, John, Jane. I didn't hear one African-American name, one Latino name. Even the culture training that they undergo, they go through voice and accent training. They go through culture training where they learn about typical American culture, things like Christmas and Easter. I sat through a few sessions where they would, there was one exercise where they had, they just handed out magazines to them and had them do little collages of the US. And so there were different things that people would, you know, cut up and put on these collages, and then they would put them up all over their office. They would show them movies. They showed them films like The Sound of Music to learn about accents, to hear how people sound, how people speak.
What did The Sound of Music give them?
According to one telemarketer that I spoke to, she said, I learned the British accent from The Sound of Music.
From Julie Andrews.
I think that they didn't want them to watch things like HBO and watch films that where there's a range of different accents. You know, you can hear the southern accent. And so they were trying to make people listen to, quote-unquote, a very stereotypical accent.
What's hard for someone trained in the Indian language to learn about an American accent? What's difficult to form?
I think the British had colonized India for a long period of time. And so in India, you learn British English. I'll say things like dance as opposed to dance. So the A is pronounced differently. I don't roll my R's as much. I haven't learned to roll my R's. I'm still learning.
Americans don't roll their R's, do they?
Oh, I think they do.
What? Roll?
Yes.
I mean, like, grrr.
A lot more than Indians do. I mean, my R's are not really R. Like, when in India, I just say R. And here, it's like R. It's much, the R, I think, is rolled a little more than And T, like I say, when I spell my name and I say it's G-U-L-A-T-I, people mistake the T for D. And so I always have to say T, and I have to like have this sort of hissing sound coming out.
What did you notice in the training, the cultural training, that they were taught to be on guard against in sort of the American, you know, the frustrated American consumer picking up the phone and saying, you know, why isn't my cell phone working?
I think they definitely are taught a lot about learning to be patient. Some very typical things that a call center employee would learn even in the U.S., you know, learning to be patient, trying to figure out ways to calm people down. Definitely there's this whole aspect of learning certain key words like the ball game, you know. So I know I'm calling you on a Sunday. I hope I'm not disturbing you while you're while you're watching the ball game. Or learning that football is American football. It's not soccer. Because in India, we think football, we call soccer football. If wherever they're calling, they'll often have the temperature, the weather of that particular city flashing at the bottom of their screen, the time of day it is in the U.S. And so things like that, that, you know, they can make some polite conversation and say, oh, so it's raining out there, huh? Or, you know, looks like a nice day outside.
To give them some comfort.
Right.
I was very engaged with the people that you encountered there. They all seemed bright, well-educated, happy employees. They seemed to love what they did, or at least who they worked with and how much money they were making. What was your impression?
I think that there's definitely money is a big factor in drawing people to these jobs. I think it's frustrating to, you know, have to deal with customers who are annoyed and things like that. But working with people who are your own age group, this idea of a college-like environment, definitely it draws people to apply for these jobs. There are people like in other industries, like for instance, there was a person who's a structural engineer that I met who really wanted a job at a call center. He has an engineering degree, and what does he want to do? He wants to talk to somebody on the phone. Very rarely would you come across that in the U.S., an engineer who wants to give up his engineering career and be a telemarketer.
Well, the numbers are staggering, really, in terms of how many jobs there are for which profession and who's being educated for those jobs. Do you have any of those that you can recall off the top of your head?
Well, at the time when I was making this film and I was doing my research, I learned that there were 3 million people scrambling to get jobs at call centers.
3 million?
3 million people.
That's phenomenal. And again, how many people are chosen?
I asked if there were more jobs or more people, and they said there were more jobs than there were people. I think it had to do with people not there not being enough people who were qualified for these jobs. And the way they gauge qualifications is just whether they can speak in English. I had this really magical moment where there was this person being interviewed for a job, and they asked him, you know, which was the last movie that you saw? And he said, oh, I saw this film called Face Off on HBO, and it's about, you know, John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, and they swap identities. And he could have talked about Mission Impossible, or he could have talked about Basic Instinct. And here he is talking about a film about identity, about people swapping identities. And I thought, this is so perfect for my film. You know, it was like one of those moments like, yes, this is going to be in my film. I know it.
On top of that, when you were there, weren't you offered a job training people with their accents?
Yeah, I thought that was really funny because I take pride in the fact that I have an Indian accent, and, you know, it connects me back to being a legitimate Indian. And my friends say, oh, yeah, you know, even though you've lived in the US all these years, you're still Indian because you have an Indian accent. And so when they said, would you like to train people to have American accents? And I was like, oh, my God, when did I start sounding American? So, yeah, I was kind of taken aback by that.
What about you? How did you get here? And what was the impetus for you to come to America and then stay?
I came to the U.S. in 1993 for my undergraduate study, partly because I think in my family, my mother had been to the U.S. for her graduate degree. So had my brother. My brother was at Harvard University. He was at MIT. My mother was at Vanderbilt studying social anthropology. And so it was almost expected of me to do the same. Or at least, maybe not so much the expectation, but I think the regard of quality education. And then I decided that I wanted to study filmmaking. You know, there were films being made about, quote-unquote, the underdeveloped nations, and they were mainly being made by white men. And I was really disturbed by it because I felt like there was a lot of exoticization, you know, stereotypes. And I thought, there's some power in representing ourselves, in representing your own self in filmmaking that is very different than being represented. So that sort of led me to want to be a filmmaker.
Do you think Americans have a very good understanding of what India's like and what it means to be Indian?
I don't think so. I feel that, I mean, it's hard to make a generalization, but I do feel that there's a lot of exoticization that takes place. You know, India is considered, I mean, when I came to school here, I remember people asking me, parents of friends of mine from Connecticut would say, oh, so I hear you have a lot of elephants and, you know, camels, and do you have electricity in India? And I'd be like, yes, we have electricity, we have MTV. You know, I grew up like with Kirk Cameron posters all over my wall. I watched Growing Pains. And yeah, I think people have very different idea of what India is. You know, it's the land of Kama Sutra. It's the land where there are camels and elephants, and there are a lot of poor people. I mean, which is true. There is a lot of, you know, poverty in India. There is a huge income gap between the rich and the poor, and it's growing each day.
So are the call centers contributing to this, or are they improving the lifestyle in India?
I think it's sort of, that's a really good question. I think that there's no real easy answer for that, because they're definitely benefiting in some ways. But I think for me, after making this film, the larger question is, who benefits ultimately? You know, who's benefiting the most? And I think it's very clear that the reason why this is all happening is really boils down to money and profits and who's making the most. When I researched, I learned that there was $30,000 per employee per year being saved by a job being outsourced to India. That's a lot of money when you count, if you think of 3 million people.
There's a powerful scene in your documentary where one vibrant young woman says, you know, I'm being paid peanuts in comparison to how much money I'm bringing in my job over the phone each day at this call center.
I guess that's sort of the most common critique of capitalism. I mean, what do you say about capitalism? And when it's global capitalism, it's become has large scale, long term repercussions.
It fascinates me that we're not just asking people to work in American institutions, we're asking people to jump through hoops, in effect, to become as American in their identity.
It's interesting you say that, because that was a real question for me when I started making this film, is that, you know, I'd ask call center employees, so are they making Americans out of Indians? And some of them would say, actually almost every, I don't think there was one person who didn't say, you know, it's, for me, it's an acting job. I'm not really becoming an American. Would you ask Tom Cruise this question if he was pretending to be somebody else in a film?
That's a good point.
You know, and I was like, well, Tom Cruise does it for a couple of months and then he moves on to his next film. And they're like, yeah, well, I change from Harry to John every couple of months, you know. So they really think of it as just selling their voice and pretending to be somebody else. One can't deny that it does have some cultural implication, because they're not spending as much time with their family, or they're not, you know, doing things, celebrating festivals and doing things that they would do if they had another job.
Did you get any feel for what these people must think of Americans when mostly their interaction with them is people that are frustrated, fed up with the big corporation, they have phones on the blink or computers that won't work?
The comment that I've heard the most is, Americans are so rude. And in comparison, I was like, well, wouldn't you say that about everyone you talk to on the phone, whether you're talking to a customer in Australia, in England, or in the US? And they're like, no, you know what? People in England are not as rude as Americans. I thought that was quite interesting to have. You know, I don't know how much of it is generalizations. I mean, we make generalizations sitting in the US about Indians. So who knows? I told somebody this morning, I'm going for a radio interview to talk about this film. They're like, you're still doing that? Yes.
Well, Sonali Gulati, thank you so much for talking with me today and with good reason.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sonali Gulati is a film producer at Virginia Commonwealth University. Her most recent film, I Am, follows a gay filmmaker who returns home to India to try to make peace with her family. With Good Reason is made possible by the University of Virginia Cancer Center, whose people strive to provide answers by asking innovative questions. UVAhealth.com. You're listening to With Good Reason, produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Elliot Majerzik, Kelly Libby, and Allison Quantz are our associate producers. Sounds of Shanghai provided by Terrence Loren. Andrew Wyndham is our executive producer, and Jeannie Palin handles listener services. We had help this week from Deborah Farmer at WHRV and Steve Clark of WCVE. Visit us at withgoodreasonradio.org or download the podcast on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter. The handle is @goodreasonradio. Or like us on Facebook. For a free copy of the show on a CD, call 877-451-5098. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.